Chapter 4. Louise. No names, okay? No jobs, no dull life talk. Let's talk about real things.
You really said that?
Yes. Well, no, I say. He did. My face burns. It sounded romantic at 4:30 in the afternoon 2 days ago, with the first illicit afternoon Negroni. But now it's like something from a cheap, tragy rom-com. 34-year-old woman walks into a bar and is sweet-talked by the man of her dreams, who turns out to be her new boss. Oh, God. I want to die from the awfulness of it all. What a mess.
Of course he did.
Sophie laughs and immediately tries to stop herself.
No dull life talk. Like, oh, I don't know, the small fact I'm married.
She sees my face.
Sorry, I know it's not technically funny, but it sort of is. And I know you're out of practice with the whole men thing, but how could you not have known from that he was married? The new boss bit I'll let you off with. That is simply bloody bad luck.
It's really not funny, I say, but I smile. Anyway, married men are your forte, not mine.
True.
I knew Sophie would make me feel better. We are funny together. We laugh. She's an actress by trade, although we never discuss how she hasn't worked outside of two TV corpses in years, and, despite her affairs, has been married to a music exec forever. We met at our NCT classes, and although our lives are very different, we bonded. 7 years on, and we're still drinking wine.
But now you're like me, she says, with a cheery wink. Sleeping with a married man. I feel less bad about myself already.
I didn't sleep with him, and I didn't know he was married. That last part isn't quite true. By the end of the night, I'd had a pretty good idea. The urgent press of his body against mine as we kissed, our heads spinning from gin. The sudden breakaway, the guilt in his eyes, the apology. I can't do this. All the tells were there.
Okay, Snow White, I'm just excited that you nearly got laid. How long's it been now?
I really don't want to think about that. Depressing me further won't help with my current predicament, I say, before drinking more of my wine. I need another cigarette. Adam is tucked up and fast asleep and won't move until breakfast and school. I can relax. He doesn't have nightmares. He doesn't sleepwalk. Thank God for small mercies. And this is all Michaela's fault anyway, I continue. If she'd cancelled before I got there, none of this would have happened. Sophie's got a point, though. It's been a long time since I've even flirted with a man, let alone got drunk and kissed one. Her life is different. Always surrounded by new and interesting people. Creative types who live more freely, drink until late, and live like teenagers. Being a single mum in London, eking out a living as a psychiatrist's part-time secretary, doesn't exactly give me a huge number of opportunities to throw caution to the wind and go out every night in the hope of meeting anyone, let alone Mr. Right. And I can't face Tinder or Match or any of those other sites. I've kind of got used to being on my own. Putting all that on hold for a while. A while that is turning into an inadvertent lifestyle choice.
This will cheer you up.
She pulls a joint out of her top pocket of her red corduroy jacket.
Trust me, you'll find everything funnier once we're baked.
She sees the reluctance on my face and grins.
Come on, Lou. It's a special occasion. You've excelled yourself. Snogged your new married boss. This is genius. I should get someone to write the film. I could play you.
Good, I say. I'll need the money when I'm fired. I can't fight Sophie, and I don't want to. And soon we're sitting out on the small balcony of my tiny flat, wine, crisps and cigarettes at our feet, passing the weed between us, giggling. Unlike Sophie, who somehow remains half-teenager, getting high is not in any way part of my normal routine. There isn't the time or the money when you're on your own. But laughter beats crying any time,
and I suck in a lungful of sweet, forbidden smoke. "It could only happen to you," she says. "You hid."
I nod, smiling at the comedy of the memory imagined through someone else's eyes. I couldn't think of anything else to do. I dived into the toilet and stayed there. When I came out, he'd gone. He doesn't start until tomorrow. He was getting the full tour from Dr. Sykes.
With his wife?
Yep, with his wife. I remember how good they looked together in that brief, awful moment of realization. A beautiful couple.
How long did you stay in the toilet for?
20 minutes.
Oh, Lou!
There's a pause, and then we both have the giggles, wine and weed buzzing our heads, and for a little while we can't stop.
I wish I could have seen your face, Sophie says.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to seeing his face when he sees my face. Sophie shrugs.
He's the married one. It's his shame. He can't say anything to you.
She absolves me of my guilt, but I can still feel it clinging, along with the shock. The gut punch of the woman I'd glimpsed by his side before I dashed into hiding. His beautiful wife. Elegant, dark-haired and olive-skinned in an Angelina Jolie way. That kind of mystery about her. Exceptionally slim. The opposite of me. The snapshot of her is burned into my brain. I couldn't imagine her ever panicking and hiding in a toilet from anyone. It stung in a way it shouldn't have. Not after one drunken afternoon. And not only because my confidence has reached rock bottom. The thing is, I'd liked him. Really liked him. I can't tell Sophie about that. How I hadn't talked to anyone like that in a long time. How happy I'd felt to be flirting with someone who was flirting back. And how I'd forgotten how great that excitement of something potentially new was. My life is, as a rule, a blur of endless routine. I get Adam up and take him to school. If I'm working and want to start early, he goes to breakfast club. If I'm not working, I may spend an hour or so browsing charity shops for designer cast-offs that will fit the clinic's subtly expensive look. Then it's just cooking, cleaning, shopping, until Adam comes home. And then it's homework, tea, bath, story, bed for him. And wine and bad sleep for me. When he goes to his dad's for a weekend, I'm too tired to do anything much other than lie in and then watch crap TV. The idea that this could be my life until Adam's at least 15 or so quietly terrifies me, so I don't think about it. But then, meeting the man in the bar made me remember how good it was to feel something. As a woman, it made me feel alive. I'd even thought about going back to that bar and seeing if he'd turned up to find me. But of course, life isn't a rom-com, and he's married, and I've been an idiot. I'm not bitter, merely sad. I can't tell Sophie any of these things because then she'd feel sorry for me. And I don't want that. And it's just easier to find it all funny. It is funny. And it's not like I sit at home bemoaning my singledom every night, as if no one could ever be complete without a man. In the main, I'm pretty happy. I'm a grown-up. I could have it way worse. This was one mistake. I have to deal with it. I scoop up a handful of Doritos and Sophie does the same. Curves are the new thin, we say in unison, before cramming the crisps into our mouths and nearly choking as we laugh again. I think about me hiding in the toilet from him, full of panic and disbelief. It is funny. Everything is funny. It might be less funny tomorrow morning when I have to face the music, but for now I can laugh. If you can't laugh at your own fuck-ups, what can you laugh at? Why do you do it? I say later, when the bottle of wine is empty between us and the evening is drawing to a close. Have affairs. Aren't you happy with Jay?
Of course I am, Sophie says. I love him. It's not like I'm out doing it all the time.
This is probably true. She's an actress. She exaggerates for the sake of a story sometimes. But why do it at all? Strangely, it's not something we've really talked about that much. She knows I'm uncomfortable with it, not because she does it, that's her business, but because I know and like Jay. He's good for her. Without him, she'd be screwed, as it were.
I have a higher sex drive than he does, she says eventually. And sex isn't what marriage is about, anyway. It's about being with your best friend. Jay's my best friend. But we've been together 15 years. Lust can't maintain itself. I mean, we still do it sometimes, but it's not like it was. And having a child changes things. You spend so many years seeing each other as parents rather than lovers. It's hard to get that passion back.
I think of my own short-lived marriage. The lust didn't die with us, but that didn't stop him from leaving after 4 years to be with someone else when our son was barely 2 years old. Maybe she has a point. I don't think I ever saw my ex, Ian, as my best friend. It just seems a bit sad to me. And it does.
That's because you believe in true love and happy ever after in a fairy tale way. That's not how life is.
Do you think he's ever cheated on you? I ask.
He's definitely had his flirtations, she says. There was a singer he worked with a long time ago. I think maybe they had a thing for a while. But whatever it was, it didn't affect us. Not really.
She makes it sound so reasonable. All I can think of is the pain of betrayal I felt when Ian left. How what he did affected how I saw myself. How worthless I felt in those early days. How ugly. The short-lived romance he left me for didn't last either. But that didn't make me feel better. I don't think I'll ever understand it, I say.
Everyone has secrets, Lou, she says. Everyone should be allowed their secrets. You can never know everything about a person. You'd go mad trying to.
I wonder, after she's left and I'm cleaning up the debris of our evening, if maybe Jay was the one who cheated first. Maybe that's Sophie's secret at the heart of her hotel room trysts. Maybe it's all done to make herself feel better, or to quietly get even. Who knows? I'm probably overthinking it. Overthinking is my speciality. Each their own, I remind myself. She seems happy, and that's good enough for me. It's only a little past 10:30, but I'm exhausted, and I peer in at Adam for a minute, a soothing comfort to be found in watching his peaceful sleep. Curled up tiny on his side under his Star Wars duvet, Paddington tucked under one arm, and then close the door and leave him to it. It's dark when I wake up in the bathroom, standing in front of the mirror, and before I've really registered where I am, I feel the sharp throb in my shin where I've walked into the small laundry basket in the corner. My heart races and sweat clings to my hairline. As reality settles around me, the night terror shatters, leaving only fragments in my head. I know what it was, though. Always the same dream. A vast building, like an old hospital or orphanage. Abandoned. Adam is trapped somewhere inside it, and I know, I just know, that if I can't get to him, then he's going to die. He's calling out for me, afraid. Something bad is coming for him. I'm running through corridors trying to reach him, and from the walls and ceilings, the shadows, as if they're part of some terrible evil alive in the building, wrap themselves around me, trapping me. All I can hear is Adam crying as I try to escape the dark, sticky strands determined to keep me from him, to choke me and drag me into the endless darkness. It's a horrible dream. It clings to me like the shadows do in the nightmare itself. The details may change slightly from night to night, but the narrative is always the same. However many times I have it, I'll never get used to it. The night terrors didn't start when Adam was born. I've always had them. But before him, I would be fighting for my own survival. Looking back, that was better, even if I didn't know it at the time. They're the bane of my life. They kill my chances of a decent night's sleep when being a single mum tires me out enough. This time, I've walked more than I've done in a while. Normally, I wake up confused, standing either by my own bed or Adam's, often in the middle of a nonsensical, terrified sentence. It happens so often it doesn't even bother him if he wakes up anymore. But then he's got his father's practicality, Thankfully, he has my sense of humour. I put the light on, look into the mirror, and groan. Dark circles drag the skin under my eyes down, and I know foundation isn't going to cover them, not in full daylight. Oh, good. I remind myself that it doesn't matter what the man from the bar, aka, oh crap, he's my new Murray boss, thinks of me. Hopefully he'll be feeling embarrassed enough to ignore me all day. My stomach still clenches, though, and my head thumps from too much wine and too many cigarettes. Woman up, I tell myself. It'll all be forgotten in a day or so. Just go in and do your job. It's only 4 in the morning, and I drink some water, then turn the light out and creep back to my own bed, hoping at least to doze until the alarm goes off at 6. I refuse to think about the way his mouth felt on mine and how good it was, if only briefly, to have that surge of desire, to feel that connection with someone. I stare at the wall and contemplate counting sheep, and then I realise that under my nerves, I'm also excited to see him again. I grit my teeth and curse myself as an idiot. I am not that woman.